My name's Bob Carpenter, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to welcome everybody here today, and I hope this is the beginning of something that's going to be grand and glorious and really supportive of all the alcoholics and their families. I couldn't think of a better place to be on Sunday afternoon than in a room getting ready to set off the Rosary Hall Alumni Association. And I want to really welcome everyone here today. I want to open the meeting with the serenity prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. If I have a few problems up here today, it's because it's the first meeting I've been to in over a year, and I'm glad to be here. It's my great duty to introduce or welcome all the honored guests, all the guests and all the honored guests. They'll be introduced individually as the program goes on. And at this time, it's my duty to introduce Mary Ann Smith, who will take it on from here.
First of all, I think we'd like to hear from our new director, Mary Reed. Mary?
It's wonderful to be here today. It's wonderful to have all of you here. We're really looking forward to a new birth for Rosary Hall, but I've just been so impressed in the 6 months that I've been here with the commitment, the dedication, the feeling that's involved at Rosary. I'm just so thankful that I'm here today. I'm thankful that you all are here with us today and looking forward to being with you next year. We had on a program that one of our guests would be Sister Victorine. And Sister Victorine is in the hospital. And I know that we're in her thoughts. And I would like to ask all of you to keep Sister Victorine in your thoughts. She needs our prayers right now. With that, I'd like to introduce someone who's been a terrific addition to Rosary Hall, and that's Dr. Adelman, our medical director.
Thank you. Since I finished my medical training in 1979, I've been working in this field, but only since I came to Rosary Hall, the 1st of September, have I done it on a full-time basis. And it's very exciting to me to be able to do this on a full-time basis and to be back to what is somewhat the birthplace of this type of thing. And so, as you can tell, since I moved here, I've lost my accent, but I've never lived in Cleveland. I didn't even hardly knew it existed until just a few months ago, but I'm really happy to be here, and I'm really excited to be associated with Rosary Hall. Thank you.
Trying to get our ex-medical director up here to talk, but he's a bashful guy, you know. He's treating these alcoholics for all this time, he lost it, so I guess he doesn't. But maybe we can give him a hand, Dr. Plaszynski. He was also Father John's physician when Father John was having his difficulties here in Charity Hospital. I guess it's time for me to introduce you, Mary.
Right.
I screwed it up before, so Mary Ann Smith's going to take it over from here.
Gee, twice in one day, that's great.
I want to welcome everyone, too, and I think it's just great that we have such a good crowd here today. But, you know, today just didn't happen. There's been a small group of people that have really spent a lot of time and a lot of work in getting this together. And for lack of a better name, we call them the Alumni Steering Committee. And they're all these people that have these little ribbons on them. And the reason they worked so hard was because they really feel that we need an alumni association. But of course, you know, every group needs members. So I'm here to ask each one of you to really consider becoming a member of the Alumni Association, particularly the graduates of Rosary Hall. We have opened it up to all alumni families and friends. And on that table by the door where you came in, there are some little white tickets. And if you would like to be a member, please sign one of those, and you will be mailed. We will get mailings to you. Now, one other little piece of business, if anybody would like to visit the different units, we will conduct tours afterwards. So again, if you go out there by those tables, we will have some people available to take you through. Thank you.
There's a few other pieces of business that I've been asked to do here. And up here on the stage, he's recording this whole thing. He's 81 years old today, and he was in Rosary Hall in 1945, before it was Rosary Hall. His name is Ed Mead, and he was under the care of Sister Victorine. You want to come out here, Ed? He just said he's glad to be here 45 years ago, or 1945, 40, what is that? 47 years ago, 48 years ago. It's now my pleasure to introduce, like Mary Ann said, that this is just the beginning of getting the Alumni Association started. And my feeling is that Rosary Hall alumni will be second only to that in the state of Ohio State's alumni. And those two people that have been in charge or running the steering committee, of which last Tuesday was my first meeting, are Greg Stein and Bill Thompson, and Greg is going to come up here and say a few words now. We're going to save Bill for Father John. Greg?
Well, welcome to all of you. The one thing I would like to remind you of on the back of your programs is a date for the first general meeting, okay? It's January 12th in the auditorium on the sixth floor, okay, of Rosary Hall. It starts at 7:30. We're going to go over a few things, maybe get some more volunteers. And also, Mary Reed and Dr. Edelman are going to give a little bit of talk on a few things that are going on here in the hall and some new ideas that we have for down the road. I hope all of you will join us in making this a very viable and useful tool for Rosary Hall. The Alumni Association can be something that the Rosary can draw from, okay? Volunteers, speakers, anything. We have, I'm sure, among all of us, quite a pile, for lack of a better word, quite a bit of knowledge. That's better. Okay. Quite a bit of knowledge in the drug areas and alcohol rehabilitation. Any ideas and feelings on this will be greatly appreciated. This is what it's all about. And not to mention the alumni group will have a few parties along the way just to keep our feelings together here. Don't forget one thing before I close. Number one, out back there, if anybody's interested in the taping of the program, okay, let Ed Thomas know. He's in back. And there's a sign-up sheet in back. I believe it's $2 per tape or something like that. Okay, and for parking, if you just tell them that you're from the meeting at Rosary Hall, they'll let you park for free. Okay? Thank you very much.
In talking to Mary Reed, the other night, the first night that I got to meet her also, the new director, and one of her goals is to get Rosary Hall back to where it used to be. So any of you that have been used to visiting or stopping in to see the patients, male or female, her office is open. You can talk to her, but you're welcome anytime during the daylight hours in later in the evening. But sometimes the patients are in meetings, and of course you'll have to wait until they get out of meetings. But that's how it used to be, and I think that's one thing that made Rosary Hall what it is today. Let's see what I'm supposed to do this time. Now, this time I'm supposed to introduce Bill Thompson. Bill Thompson, he probably doesn't know that I'm going to say this, but Bill Thompson was the director of Guest House up in Lake Orion, Michigan, for over 16 years. And one of our speakers, Jimmy P., I ought to use his last name just to irritate him, told me he was in town and that we ought to get him down here at Rosary Hall. One telephone call to Bill Thompson, and he said he'd be glad to. He's a Rosary Hall graduate of some years ago, which I'll let him tell you, and he's helped us get this thing started. So without carrying on any longer, I know it's hot in here, I'll introduce Bill Thompson. Bill?
Thank you, Bob. I am Bill Thompson. I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be anywhere. Most successful human endeavors that change people's lives to the better have heroes and heroines. Nursing, as we know it today, had its Florence Nightingale and Clara Barton, and the resolution of polio had its Dr. Jonas Salk, and Alcoholics Anonymous had its Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith, and certainly, Rosary Hall is no exception. Rosary Hall has changed thousands of people's lives, even saving many of them. It's been a pioneer in hospital treatment of alcoholism when that condition, as an illness, was accepted by very, very few people. Rosary Hall has its heroes and heroines also. Among those were Sister Ignatia of happy and venerated memory, and Sister Victorine, who right now lies gravely ill in this hospital. This lovely woman has dedicated more than a half a century of her life in selfless dedication to the people of God. Sister Victorine and others of the Sisters of Charity of St. Augustine, and most certainly our guest speaker today, Father John Baptist McCarthy. Now, Father John, as he's lovingly known, has touched and influenced the lives of thousands of people, including me, not only in Rosary Hall, but where he served for many years, but in Minnesota, Iowa, the Dakotas, and God knows where else. You know, AA tells us that we only get to keep that which we give away. That being true, this popular, pleasant, poor, peregrinating priest has an awful, awful lot left to share with us today. So I'm privileged to present to you Father John Baptist McCarthy.
You could drink it, do me any harm. Oh, Lord. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, amen. The lovely ladies and handsome gentlemen, and I don't know whether I'm here or not, so that this is... It might just be a dream. Maybe I've died and gone to heaven. I know I'm not in hell or no ashtrays there. And I got one. I bring her with me. I don't take any chances anymore. I carry it with me. Dreadful addiction, girls and boys. Horrible. No excuse for it. I'd give it up except it's the only character defect I have left. And if I quit smoking, I'll be perfect, and nobody wants a perfect old man around. So pray for me. All cigarette smokers are going to hell, aren't they, Dr. Pope? Just say a prayer, there'll be an ashtray there for me. Oh, I think this is kind of a, whether it's a dream or I've died and gone to heaven, because frankly, I didn't expect to see any of y'all until we did get to heaven. This is a surprise to me. So I do feel like I'm maybe in a dream I might wake up and find myself back in my nice, warm, cozy room in Philadelphia. I don't know what to say either. I'm delighted to see the program, that letter you sent out, and the plans, the future plans for Rosary Hall. It's marvelous. I don't know what else to say about it. It's Emerson. There was a fellow named Emerson. Did you all know him? Oh. Oh, it was before your time. Emerson told me once. He said, an institution is only the lengthened shadow of its founder. Meaning, I suppose, that as long as the institution maintains and continues the purpose and the policies of the founder, it will continue. It will flourish, continue to flourish. Once it loses that, that's the end of the institution. You see this in religious communities, you see it in businesses, and anywhere. Now the founder of Rosary Hall, Sister Ignatia, Lord have mercy on her, and in a way before her, Sister Victorine, back in the 40s, Eddie, hello there, was back in the old L ward, and Dr. Flo, with the bicycle pump, pumping glucose into drunks. They go back a long way. And then Sister Victorine moved over to St. John's. She was taken out and made administrator there. And even there, she hid out drunks in her office. So the founders, or the foundesses, I guess you'd say. And it was based on the policy of the other founders, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. Based on the concept of AA, the AA philosophy. Sister Ignatia was, in my opinion, the catalyst. She was the glue that kept Dr. Bob and Bill together in the early days. She wasn't the spark of the spiritual aspect of the program, but she was a part of it. You know, it always baffled me how two drunks, and Protestant drunks at that, incredible, could produce a spiritual program. Did you ever think about that? And incidentally, not very good Protestants either. And they came up with a program and wrote a book that to this day it's never been successfully contradicted. But the policies and the principles, if you will, the mind of the founder, the institution is no greater or will last no longer. It's the shadow, the lengthened shadow, Emerson said. That's what the old guy said. I just thought of it. He said it's the lengthened shadow of the founder. And you're the lengthened shadow. Did you think of yourself as a shadow? That's not too bad a thing to say. As long as you keep this thing alive, it's yours. I don't know how often even Sister Ignatia spoke to me about an alumni group. Of course, she was pretty old at that time, and Sister Victorine spoke of it frequently. Why we never got around to doing it? Of course, she wanted to rent the Good Time too and take all the Rosie Hall graduates out for a ride in the lake. Or she said we could go into a park and have a picnic and get the alumni, get the people there to sign and say they'd be willing to sponsor other patients so we could call on them, instead of calling constantly on the same half dozen or so. So this is the mind of the founder. Miss Mary Reed and Dr. Adelman and the Mary Smith, whoever, who are you all? They are fostering the mind of the founder, and so Rosary Hall will go on. It will go on, God willing, and with your help. Don't leave it all in the hands of God, you know. That don't work. My mother used to say, what's he got to do with it? She took care of minor things, handle the other things. I'm delighted to be here, to be alive. I first came here, I suppose I should tell some kind of a story. Oh, I'm mixed up. As I say, I don't know whether I'm here or not. You'd rather be here where you're at. Did you ever hear tell about the... I haven't got any steam left, ladies and gentlemen. Forgive me. I think Bill Thompson was out. I was out in Detroit somewhere last summer, and they asked me to give an after-dinner speech, and I did. I talked. And a couple of my classmates, old goats, and a lot of old-timers in AA up there, came up to me afterwards and said, "You've lost your punch, you've lost your zip, you went." I said, "What the hell, I got you out in 15 minutes. You complain about that." But I swore then I wasn't going to talk no more to groups of people. And then Bill called me and asked me to come here. "Hello, beauty. I didn't see you before." There was a little fellow, I'll try to get back some of my zip. There was a little fellow standing at the dock at County Cork watching his ship unload. The people getting off, lots of people. And somebody came by and saw him and said, "Patrick, what are you doing here? And what are you doing in your Sunday suit? Why aren't you home digging the potatoes?" Well, he said, "I come down here to meet my brother." "Well, your brother? I didn't know you had a brother." He said, "Of course I've got a brother. He left home 50 years ago. He's gone all over the world, and that ship came in from Australia. I had a letter from him in the post office, and he said he'd be coming in on this ship. So I got dressed and came down to see him." Man said, "My gosh, that's wonderful. Left home 50 years ago." "Yes." "So that's why I put on my Sunday suit to come down to meet him." Well, he said, "That's marvelous, that's marvelous." But he said, "There's hundreds of people getting off the ship. How will you know them? Will you recognize them?" "Of course I won't recognize them, you Amadon." He said, "I told you the man left home 50 years ago when I was just a little boy." He said, "Well, how in the world are you ever going to get together?" Well, he said, "He'll know me. I haven't gone anywhere." I don't quite know what that has to do with my being here. "But you know me, I haven't gone anywhere, so to speak. I haven't gone anywhere. And but I first came here to Cleveland." I'm not going to go into a long-winded drunk a log, don't be afraid. "I first came here, I was thinking, about a quarter of a century ago. I think it was then, quarter of a century ago. At that time, I was a 100 years old. And I'd been sober in AA, I should specify, in good standing in AA. I'd been in AA before, but not such good standing. But I was sober and fairly beginning to get sane. And I had a superior general, and he called me in one day after I had a year or two of sobriety. And he said, "I want only the best for you, Jonathan." He was very polite to me. So he said, "Now that you're sober, I want you to go to Cleveland." I said, "Cleveland, Tennessee?" He said, "No, Cleveland, Ohio." I had turned my life and will over to God. Lord, I keep coughing. That cough is due to the fact that I don't smoke enough because people... Every time somebody cuts me off from these camels, I start coughing. Anyhow, he said, "I want you to go to Cleveland, Ohio." I said, "Good Lord, boss, it's way up there on a lake and it's cold." I said, "Why don't you send me back south with my own kind?" I said, "You got trouble in Savannah, Georgia, Dublin, Georgia, Columbus, Georgia, Meridian, Mississippi. Shreveport, Louisiana. I said, send me back down with my own kind. He said, your own kind's moving to Cleveland. You're going to Huff. He said, you're going to live in the Huff area. You'll find your own kind right there. Well, you know, he said, the reason I want you to go to Cleveland, the main reason, he says, it's a good AA town. He said, I want you to go there and see Sister Ignatia. And go on down and see her, and she'll know who you are. He said, and who knows, she's getting old, maybe you can help her. He said, I don't know whether she'll let you or not. But I want only the best for you, so I want you to go to where the best AA is. Cleveland, Ohio. Now, this guy was from Jersey City. He knew them. Of course, I had protested. I said, I want to go south. No, you go to Cleveland. Well, I didn't protest real vigorously because this guy was about 6'5", you know, and he looked like Mr. Clean, but with hair. He said, I thought you turned your life and will over to God. I said, I did. Well, he said, I'm the voice of God. I'm the power that's greater than you. So I came to Cleveland. Can't argue with that. And I walked in to see Sister Ignatia. I guess she was going to put me in pajamas. Turned out she'd heard of me. In fact, she'd heard of me for 20 years. She'd been waiting for me. Every day I come down and she sat me in her office. I don't know whether any of you ever knew that, where her office was. When she sat me in the corner there. She said, sit in the corner. And I sat there while she talked to the patients, one after the other. I just sat there until she told me, go home. I did that for days. Mind, I was sober almost 2 years. You know, I had all my buttons. Yeah. Not quite. After a while, she began to send me over to the chapel. Some poor guy had come in, and she'd say to him something like, he'd say he was all ready to go home. He got the whole program. He knew it all. And she'd say, what's the seventh step? Ah, sister, I don't know him, you know, quite in that order or something. She said, we have to make a fifth step. Father John, go over to the chapel with this fellow. He should go to confession. He should make his fifth step. So I go over to chapel with the guy and say, you want to go to confession or make a fifth step? No. So, of course, I had an ashtray in my pocket. I'd say, have a cigarette. He said, I don't want to, you know, I said, well, we can't go out. We've got to stay here. If we get up and walk out of here right now, she'll know darn right well you didn't make your fifth step. So we better stay here a while or we'll both get scolded. Now, maybe you don't mind getting scolded, but I do. So we'll stay right here. So we'd stay there. So what's your name? Tell him my name. And we'd sit there and swap a few lies. Tell me about his drinking, and hell, I could always top it, you know. You know, the first liar ain't got a chance. And after a while, he'd tell me this story, you know. I said, well, geez, you already went to confession. You got any objection to absolution? That went on for quite a while. And I used to sit in the meeting, and Sister would talk to us, and I'd sit there. And it got so after a while, you know, she'd begin to fall asleep and she'd nod off. This is an amazing thing. There'd be 10 or 12 people sitting there and me, and she'd fall asleep and we'd all just sit there. Isn't that funny? Nobody thought of waking her up. Nobody thought of getting up and leaving. That was... We just sat there, quiet. Till eventually some noise out in the hall or something would wake her up and she'd say, "Where was I?" and go on from there. One day she fell asleep like that and she woke up and she turned to me and she said, "Father John, you talk to the men." Good Lord of mercy. Now mind, I don't think I'd given a lead in AA or anything. I didn't know what to do. But I was scared to talk and I was scared not to. So I started talking and you know I've been talking ever since. Did you know that? The philosophy. I did say to her, I said, "What do I talk about?" She says, "Talk about the steps of AA. Talk about the AA program." There's nothing like it. To admit that we're powerless over... Hey, did you see those two magazine articles, Newsweek and the U.S. News Report? Last week on alcoholism. It's amazing. Haven't been anything new in the last 50 years, huh? And the short shrift they give to AA. The short shrift. Which is the only generally available follow-up therapy for alcoholism and at just the right price, as we say, huh? Nothing. To admit that we're powerless over alcohol, they never seen, we keep searching. We keep searching for the etiology, there's a fancy word for you. What causes this thing? What makes the alcoholic? It's the experience. The experience with the source, that's what does it. Once you get that experience, boy, you ain't never gonna forget it. It's going to be with you till your dying day, and if there's anything to this business of the body rising gloriously immortal after you're dead, you know, it'll come back then. It's a personal experience. A spiritual experience, spiritus. And only the one that's had it is going to know it. And yet at the same time, we can't get drunk and we can't stay sober. Hey, Marty, I just saw you. Oh, Marty. Hi. I got one good eye, you know. Fellow in South Carolina gave it to me last year. Took out an old eye and put in a new one. It's a real good one. Works pretty good. Do we admit that we're powerless over this experience and immediately think that God could restore us to sanity because we know we're not quite sane? God could restore us to sanity. He could, but would he? He will if we turn our life and will over to him. And the third step of AA. To turn our life and will over. And somewhere along the line, usually in Rosary Hall or wherever we are, we hope and pray that our patients will find that to be true. We make a big deal out of some of these steps, I fear. We make too much, instead of keeping it simple, as Dr. Bob said. He said, "Find God, clean house, and help others," summing up the whole program. But the third step, to turn our life and will over to God, On page 63 of the book, I've told you before, it says, God, I offer myself to you and to build with me and do with me as you please. Relieve me of this bondage, of this slavery of self. Take away my difficulties, but only in order that victory over them will bear witness to those I would help of the power of their love of their way of life. I asked Bill Wilson one time, geez, how's that for dropping names? Oh, would you like to shake the hand that shook the hand of Bill Wilson? You also shook the hand that shook the hand of Jack the Ripper. I said to him, boss, why'd you put that prayer in the book on page 63? He said, oh, Father, I don't know. He said, that's what we drunk said when we got sober. We said that or something like that. I said, well, I suppose you're supposed to say it every day. And he said, of course you are. I do believe the man thought we were all saying it every day. Well, I didn't tell him. I didn't tell him. But to say it, I still say it every day since then. I wake up in the morning and I got a nice room. Very nice warm room. Oh, I'm a lucky old man. Yeah, nice warm room, and I got a coffee pot in there too. And every morning I wake up and thrust myself and say that prayer. And then I say, thank you, God, for caffeine and nicotine. And boy, am I glad I don't have to go to work. Oh, I'm so glad. And if it's snowing, I think it's... ain't that nice. Ain't that nice. To turn our life and will over to God, but to tell somebody else about it, to make that third step with someone else. Of course, I made it with my superior general when I first began to get sober. It was the age of 48 or 9. And he told me, by the way, he told me other things besides going to Cleveland. He told me to make my third step. This man was smart. He wasn't a drunk, but he was smart. Strange for a fellow that wasn't a drunk. He knew AA. He told me, when you get there, you tell sister that you're going to make your third step with her. And I did. And then with Sister Victorine. And periodically, Dr. Plew, I think, can vouch for it, Sister Victorine would tell me, no uncertain terms, aren't you taking things back in your own hands? I thought you turned your life and will over to God. Very important. The fourth step of a moral inventory, it is hard work and it is dirty work. But as Dr. Bob clearly said, clean house. That was the thing. Do it. Put down a fearless and searching moral inventory. And then to go and tell that to someone else, the fifth step. To God, to yourself, and to one other person. And again I stress, that one other person, who is it? It says clearly in the book, those of us of a religious denomination that requires confession should go to the duly appointed authority it is to receive this. Never forget it. And it says, even if you're not of such a denomination, then you should do well to go to an ordained member of an established religion. I'm not beating the drum for the clergy. I'm telling you what a couple of Protestants said in the big book. an ordained member of an established religion. That leaves out all counselors, social service workers, sponsors, and everybody else. That's who you make your fifth step with. It says it clearly. When all else fails, follow the directions. And then the sixth step of the character defects. Looking at them. What are they? The alibis, lying, rationalizing, putting the blame on others. How many? How many we have? Even the business of the paranoia, the hiding the jug. You know, and we think we're sane. I don't think it was so bad hiding a bottle or one thing and another. It was getting rid of the empties. You go out on a bombing expedition, you know. Is that a character defect? I don't know. But the lying certainly is. We lie to ourselves. Lie to ourselves. But to list those things and have a good look at them. And then the seventh step of asking God to remove our character defects. And again it says, it puts a prayer in there. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Please remove from me every single defect of character, but there's a qualification there that stands in the way of my being of service. Huh? Again, the business of service. To share our experience, strength, and hope. And to serve others, to carry the message. To carry the message of AA, to carry the message of sobriety, to carry the message, yes, of Rosary Hall. Unless we show gratitude, we're going to lose this gift of sobriety that God gave us. Gratitude. And gratitude isn't natural. It ain't natural. Again, we're back to the spiritual aspect, if you will. Gratitude is supernatural. Gratitude isn't natural. It ain't natural. Did you know that? Parents expect their children to be grateful. It ain't natural. Of course not. It's incredible. St. Vincent, the patron saint of the Sisters of Charity of St. Augustine, and whose statue is up there as you walk in toward Rosary Hall, that big fellow, the gold, old painted gold. I really wanted them to put my statue there. I'm going to get a statue put on my grave, though. But not standing up, sitting down. Did I tell you all, I'm talking too long, that they've arranged my funeral already? Yeah, the Father General and Mother General, letters going back and forth. Don't know where I should be waked and where the Mass should be said and what I was to be dressed in and all the way down the line, you know. And so you do that in the chapel in Philadelphia on Solly Avenue and you get Mr. Floyer, he's going to be the undertaker, to get the whole damn thing arranged. Said to me, how do you feel about that? He said, it reminded me of a story my sponsor used to tell. I think he got it from Abraham Lincoln. About the guy being ridden out of town on a rail, tarred and feathered, and somebody said, an investigative reporter, you know, how do you feel about this? He said, if it weren't for the honor of the thing, I'd sooner walk. Where was I? The seventh step to what we can do for others, to say that prayer. And then the eighth step, a list of those we've offended. The ninth step of going around and making amends. It does seem like a tremendous thing, but you do it one day at a time, little by little. And going around making amends, usually you're pretty well received. Not always, not always. I think I told some of you one time when I stopped by to make amends at a priest's house in New Providence, New Jersey. And I remembered I kept this guy up all night. I brought my own jug, though. So I thought I'd stop by and apologize to him for it. And he didn't even open the screen door. It was locked. He let me know in no uncertain terms if I even put my foot in that town again, he'd have me arrested, drunk or sober. Poor man later died of cirrhosis of the liver. Lord have mercy on a cirrhotic liver. But the ninth step. Maybe I'm trying to indicate, and I always have when talking to you or listening to you, maybe we got to keep a sense of humor. I don't think you get sober without. And we can develop that in Rosie Hall. We often have. I've often said, too, in the nicest sections of a hospital, the administration don't know this. Nicest sections are the maternity ward and the alcoholic ward. You know? Once the baby's born, everybody's pretty happy. And once the guy gets sober, it's a pretty happy ward to be in, you know? And they're the most pleasant wards in the hospital. And there we got to develop a sense of humor. And even a sense of humor about doing the steps. I don't mean to laugh at them, but it's some kind of a sense of humor. I'll tell you something you don't know and nobody else knows except me. And then I'll tell it to you, you'll know it. Lovely ladies and handsome gentlemen, there are only three real things in this world. I'm not real. You just think I'm here. Three real things. God, human folly, and a sense of humor. The first two are incomprehensible. Don't try to figure them out, but hang on to your sense of humor. The tenth step of a daily check, a daily inventory, somewhere along the line to stop. And when we are wrong, promptly admit it. It's a wonderful thing once you get to do it. It baffles people. Boy, you can knock out your worst enemy with it. Wonderful. He says, you did that? So I say, yeah. Promptly admit it. They don't know what to do about it, you know? This is where the sense of humor comes in. You're wrong. Wrong again, Mac. I live now every day with the senior sisters, they call them nowadays, the senior sisters in the community to which I belong, in the mother house, in the infirmary. And there isn't a single day that one of them don't tell me I'm wrong about something or other. Now, some of them are older than I am, you know. 5 years or so, not much more. They can't be much older. Eh? But they've been doing that to me for 60 years. And I say, yes. Wrong again, Mac. Lord, that's awful. And they're stymied. Stick with it. Try it especially at home. That's where it counts. And the 11th step of becoming daily more conscious of God. How do we do it? Oh, I don't know. Read a few pages of the book. Read the 24-hour book. To become daily more conscious of God. And if after we've done these things, we strive to carry this message to others. And that's what we want to do. And the more we do it, the soberer we get and the happier we get. The bottom line is I want to be happy. That's why we drink. That's why we drink. To be happy. And I still want to be happy. And that's the way to achieve it. I don't know whether I talk what the thing that Miss Reed and Dr. Adelman or Dr. Plew or Bill Thompson or Bob Carpenter wanted me to talk about this afternoon or not. I really don't know. I'll probably go away. I never gave a talk to any of you that I didn't go away feeling like, geez, I sure loused that up. Maybe that's good for my humility. But I have opened my heart to you, and I issue you an invitation. Come back and live in my heart, and pay no rent. May the blessing of God, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost descend upon you all, remain with you forever. Let me get out of here.
I don't think there's anybody in this room that can't believe that that's the old Rosary Hall. Father John again. We close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer, but before we do, let me remind you that there's pastries and donuts and coffee back there at the back. And also, those of you that can give us a hand in this Alumni Association, please do. Let's get this system built up. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Father, would you lead us in the Lord's Prayer?
Be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and power, and the glory.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. Please check out our website at sobrietytalks.com. You can also contact us by sending an email to sobrietytalks@aol.com. Thank you.